welcome to our special holiday edition of the Huffine Sports Medicine podcast. We just want to let you know that after this podcast this week, there will be no other podcast for the next 2 weeks. We'll be resuming our regular podcasting schedule on January 7th. We've got to give our elves here at the Huffines Institute a little bit of rest so we can come at you fresh again after the new year. But you know, there's nothing better than a gift from us over this holiday season. So listen to the podcast that's coming up, answer the question, and be the first one to respond to Huffines Podcast at hlkn.tamu.edu to win that prize. Also, while I've got you here, I want to let you know that we've got a special speaker coming. If you're in the College Station, Bryan region, and you're available on January the 10th, we would invite you to hear Dr. Michael Stone. Dr. Stone is currently at the East Tennessee State University, where he is laboratory director in the Department of Kinesiology, Leisure, and Sports Sciences. He was formerly the head of sports physiology for the United States Olympic Committee and has been awarded the National Strength and Conditioning Association Lifetime Achievement Award. So he's very, very knowledgeable about research in the area of weight training, resistance training, strength training, and does a great job in his talk. So we would welcome you there. Again, we hope you all have a happy holiday season, and now on with the podcast.
From the beautiful campus of Texas A&M University, the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology brings you the Sports Medicine Podcast. Our mission is to make sense of and connect the science, practice, and application of the latest findings in sports medicine and human performance to the real world. Here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello and welcome to the Huffines Sports Medicine Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading us and taking a little bit of time today to listen to us. Again, we're bringing you some of the wide and varied world that is sports medicine. And today we're really pleased and greatly honored to have Dr. Rick Kreider here with us. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Kreider. Dr. Kreider is a professor and the head of the Health and Kinesiology Department here at Texas A&M, and it's probably the largest such department in the country. He is also the Thomas A. and Joan Reed Endowed Chair for Disadvantaged Youth. He has written 3 books, over 81 articles. He got his PhD originally from the University of Southern Mississippi, and what's really cool is this past July he was honored by the National Strength and Conditioning Association with their Nutrition Research Achievement Award. And so, great to have you on the podcast today, Dr. Kreider.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so we're really excited to chat with you about all the different things that you're doing in the lab. Why don't you tell us what you're doing in the lab right now?
Well, our role of our lab is the Exercise and Sport Nutrition Lab. And the goal is to look at the role of exercise and nutrition on health, performance, and disease.
Cool.
So we do a wide variety of research looking at ways to optimize health, and specifically performance with nutrition and exercise interventions.
Well, really cool. Do you look at any particular population, women, men, or whatever?
Everybody.
Over
the last number of years, we've been focusing on weight loss in women and looking at high-protein, high-carbohydrate diets and resistance training as a modality of exercise with the CURS research we've been doing.
Yeah.
But we also do lots of research with guys and look at ways to increase performance and athletes, strength conditioning, power, endurance. Yeah. So we've done a little bit of everything over the years.
Yeah, I know you've got quite a history in the, we'll say supplements. We'll use that as a general term right now. So let's just start with that a little bit when we talk about strength training and so forth. If someone's starting a workout regimen, do you think they should, if they take supplements, will they see faster results?
Yes. Short answer, yes.
I love that definitive answer. Yeah.
Yeah. We often get that question. You know, is it something just for athletes or somebody just starting training? Well, most people get interested in exercise by the response they feel in the first few weeks or first month or so.
Right. If they get
motivated and see some changes, they then often can adhere to the program better. And so being smart about training and helping adjust the diet and meal timing and nutrient timing can be some very effective ways for people to see results faster and also not have as much soreness and those type of negative effects that they may feel when they just started an exercise program.
Sure.
So for beginners or even an advanced athlete, I think that sport nutrition is not only just for athletes, it's actually for the average population and just learning when to consume certain types of nutrients to optimize training.
Mm. Cool. Are there any particular supplements that they should be thinking about taking?
Well, we start with the diet.
Okay.
So the first thing, most people don't eat a good diet, so
right.
We try to teach them how much carbohydrate, protein, and fat they should have to promote general training adaptations.
Mm.
Now, the level of training does impact on how much nutritional intervention you need to do, and
mm-hmm.
certainly people who are at the very end or high level athlete need to do more for nutrition.
Mm.
Same thing probably with some diseased individuals.
Right.
Beginning, some modest things can be done in the diet to help them achieve better results. But then there are some supplements and nutrient timing aspects that can make a big difference right away.
Hmm.
And so we usually provide very general diet guidelines first and then talk about some supplements that may help optimize training adaptation.
Cool. Now, when you say nutrient timing, what are you talking about?
Well, we used to think just as long as you had enough carbs and protein and fat in the diet, you'd be okay.
Right.
We now know that if you time nutrient intake, and have a certain amount of carbohydrate and protein before you exercise, carbohydrate and fluids and things during exercise with some electrolytes. And really that post-exercise window appears to be the most optimal to optimizing training adaptations.
Hmm.
That if you are smart about what you eat and when you eat, you can augment your training adaptations.
Hmm. Any particular guidelines for that post-training window? Or?
Yeah, it depends on your goals.
Right.
If it's just general fitness, a snack or something afterwards, it's primarily carbohydrate. You know, we generally teach people how many grams they should have per weight they are per
sure.
kilogram.
Yeah.
But generally, you know, a snack, something like a yogurt or a high carbohydrate but a little bit of protein type of snack would be beneficial. There's a lot of ready-to-drink supplements and things that are available, energy bars, that type of thing are
sure.
very convenient. If that's not available, then just a light snack that has carbohydrate and protein in it. But then within 2 hours, try to get a good meal that can balance
okay.
that out.
So after working out for a couple hours, then we want to make sure we eat.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the other thing is we know that timing also affects, for example, many people don't eat breakfast in the morning, especially athletes.
Right.
They get up to train.
Right.
And they go to classes or they go to work, and then they try to train in the afternoon again maybe, and they're not getting the fuel they need. So, for example, if you start and work out in the morning without any type of nutrition beforehand, you're going to break down more protein, you're going to break down more tissue, and so it's harder to recover, it's harder to train mm-hmm. and adapt.
Mm-hmm.
So a small snack before you start working out, or if you're working out in the morning, have a light snack before you go to bed. And that's not what we tell people to lose weight.
Right.
But for an athlete, it's very important to keep the carbohydrate fuel available to the muscle throughout their training.
Right. But regardless of who we're talking to, we want them to eat breakfast.
Yes.
That's unfortunately the thing people miss yeah. so much nowadays. They just forget breakfast.
And I can't tell you how many times we look at athletes' diets.
Yeah.
That's the first thing they skip because they want to sleep in. They don't want to have to go. And one of the first things we do with teams is say, well, you need to have mandatory breakfast.
Mm.
You need to
yeah.
check to make sure they're getting up and getting something to eat because that's the fuel they'll have at the afternoon practice when most athletes are working out after work or in the afternoon after school.
I mean, people forget that it's many times when they wake up, it's been 10 hours since they ate
right.
last time.
Exactly.
And so their body's got to go to other sources of fuel
right.
other
exactly.
than if you don't eat breakfast. And
you're like a fasted state.
Yeah.
And then you're working out on top of that. So you're starting, we tell athletes, it's like filling your tank up with gas.
Mm.
If you start a workout in the morning and you haven't eaten, you know, since the night before, you're starting the tank, you know, the workout with 3/4 tank full. And so you're going to run out of gas
right.
quicker.
Right.
Whereas if you top that off in the morning, then you're going to have more gas for the end of the day.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And we want everybody listening, eat breakfast.
Yeah.
Eat breakfast.
Absolutely.
Nothing wrong with that. So we started talking about supplements there a little bit. I know you've done a lot of work with supplements in the
mm-hmm.
past, creatinine and branched chain amino acids and so forth. So what are the hot supplements that are coming today that you think are actually valid?
Well, if you look at most things sold at the local nutrition store, I won't use any names, but a lot of them aren't based on science.
Mm.
They are based on theory, and some theories are stronger than others. There's a few things out there that have been consistently shown in the literature, and that's usually what we teach our athletes to focus on. Hydration, the best ergogenic aid is still water.
It's still water.
You know, and people don't think about that, but if you dehydrate, you're going to have a poor performance. You're going to increase risk of heat illness and those type of things. If you're out there more than an hour, some type of sports drink that's got some sodium, some salt in it as well can also help maintain hydration.
Now, it doesn't have to be full strength, though.
No. Well, the general principle is the longer you're out exposed,
mm-hmm.
the more diluted you want your sports drinks to be.
Okay.
So, for example, in an Ironman triathlon where they're out there 10, 12, 15 hours or so, you don't drink straight sports drinks. You usually dilute it in half. And that will depend on preference of athletes, but usually you can almost train yourself to drink more and more fluid. Where fluids are focused, more dilute. Where it's not as much focused, then you can have a little bit stronger carbohydrate, more toward normal dosage.
Sure. Yeah, just because the full strength ones sometimes can cause problems in and of themselves.
Yeah, and you know, we always tell athletes, don't ever try something during competition you haven't tried out in practice.
Yes.
And I've learned the hard way in several, you know, I'm a football player, old football player, and I've tried some triathlons, and I made some mistakes on trying to do things, and I know, I supposedly know what's going on.
Yeah.
But if you have something beforehand you're not used to and your body doesn't respond well, you end up paying the price.
I think it's amazing how many of us in the business do the same thing. We think during the performance that something we can change something and it would work, and it often doesn't work.
Yeah,
do what you practice.
Exactly. Fortunately, it was a practice race type thing, but I had a little bit too strong of a carbohydrate drink and did my bike and then jumped off trying to do a run and, you know, kind of training for at a race, trying to train for a triathlon, and boy, I just got terrible stomach issues during the rest of the race. It was terrible.
Yeah.
So you just got to be careful.
Yeah. You see so many, there's so many TV ads now for this supplement and that supplement, and it seems that the word they use is thermogenic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you think about these, what is it about these supplements that they claim to be thermogenic for weight loss?
Well, thermogenic is a classification of dietary supplements that basically will increase resting energy expenditure. And small amounts of increases in energy expenditure in your daily resting metabolism really can add up. For example, if you increase just 3 or 4 calories per hour over a day and over a week and a month, that really adds up to several pounds over a long time.
Right.
And so many of these thermogenic supplements can increase about 5 to 10 calories per hour. And then if you take that during an exercise and weight loss program, you typically see about 1 to 2 pounds of extra fat loss, you know, in a 8 to 12 week period.
Okay.
The potential issues with them is they are often are stimulatory. They often have a lot of caffeine. They have herbal stimulants as well, and some people may react adversely to that type of stimulation, just like if you went and had a strong cup of coffee. Some people get jittery or might feel more arrhythmia issues and blood pressure issues. So you have to be careful with those things. But most studies show that they could be safely done if they're healthy people are taking them and they don't overdo
it. Right. So, and you mentioned the amount of weight someone can lose. I mean, that's the other thing that we see promised is this huge amount of weight that people can lose, supposedly, in a very short
30 pounds in 30 days.
Yeah, and it's frustrating for those of us that have read the literature. So what kind of weight loss should people expect? What's safe weight loss?
Well, we usually talk about 1 to 2 pounds per week.
Okay, everybody heard that. One to two pounds per week. We'll say it together. That's okay.
You know, so in a lot of people's expectations are you're going to lose all this weight. If you lose more than that, you typically are going to lose a lot of muscle mass and fluid. And the muscle mass is really what you're trying to not lose.
Right.
Because then you lose your ability to produce energy and resting metabolism, which makes it easier to regain the weight afterwards.
Right.
That's why we've been doing with our research things like resistance training to help maintain muscle mass as people are trying to lose weight, having a slightly higher protein intake in the diet compared to a more carbohydrate traditional diet, which also helps prevent the loss in muscle mass. So the ideal way to lose weight is about 1 to 2 pounds of fat loss per per week, and over 2-3 months you're losing 6, 8, 10 pounds of fat loss while not losing any muscle mass and not losing any resting metabolism. And if you can do that, you're going to have more permanent weight loss. And over time, that makes a big impact on health.
Yeah, someone might say, you know, that's not very fast. I'm not going to lose that much.
Yeah.
That's not going to help me get into the pants I want to get into.
Right.
Or my, you know, Speedo by May.
Well, it's almost you can pay me now or pay me later type of thing. So if you lose the weight too quick, you lose too much muscle. One of my students, when I was actually at the University of Memphis, coined the phrase, they're finny. They're still fat. But they get skinny, and so they don't lose the percent body fat, they just lose a lot of muscle.
Right.
And the problem with that is your metabolism goes down, and it makes it easier to regain the weight. So you end up with this yo-yo phenomenon over time.
To shift gears a bit, it's obvious that you've done a lot in your career, seen a lot. What makes you excited to come to work? What's coming down the pike in sports medicine that really gets you jazzed up and makes you enthusiastic for your work?
Well, I think we're finding now that exercise is a medicine. You know, it's an important thing that you're hearing a lot with the American College of Sports Medicine, but there's no doubt that exercise plays a role in optimizing health and helping people deal with disabilities or illnesses that they may deal with. Mm-hmm. It's not just a physical therapy approach where you hurt a leg and then you go to the physical therapy. This is something you can adopt for the lifetime to really make a big health benefit. So we've been focusing on weight loss, maintaining muscle mass, and really trying to modify health factors, hormones that regulate appetite, improving insulin sensitivity, helping reduce triglycerides and the things that affect what's called metabolic syndrome, which increases the risk to heart disease and mortality. So we're seeing that a lot of the application of exercise, even with working with athletes, has applications for reducing risk of disease as well as optimizing health of people that have problems.
Sure. And exercise almost is a medicine.
Yes, absolutely.
Maybe the cheapest medicine somebody can get.
Yeah. I mean, there's dose effect. There's, you know, one workout can do amazing things in promoting protein synthesis and improving insulin sensitivity. And if you do that repeatedly over time, there are significant benefits that could be achieved. So that's the exciting thing. You know, we initially did a lot of research in supplements, and the one that hit the biggest is creatine. And what you're seeing now that's being done with creatine, it's just fantastic, is the medical applications, use of creatine with clinical populations, with depression, with people with high blood lipids and homocysteine levels that increase risk of disease. There's lots of, there's use of creatine now with people who have traumatic brain injury or concussions, and they're finding that if they take people with concussions and give them creatine, that survival rates and things are improved markedly. And so these are the newest data coming out that, you know, it all started with, well, can I run faster? Can I bench more weight?
Sure.
Can I increase my muscle mass better? And now the applications are for health, and that's what's exciting about our field.
So speaking of creatinine, is there any negative effects to long-term use of creatinine?
Yeah, it's creatine.
Creatinine
is the breakdown product, which is often, you know, people will say it's found in meat and fish.
Yeah.
So a pound of fish has about 2 grams or so of creatine. We've done a lot of studies on the safety of creatine with athletes, and there's been a lot of clinical populations now been studied for a number of years, actually. And all the data shows that it doesn't cause any adverse effect. In fact, there's a lot of just general health benefits.
Really?
Yeah, and we were just at the creatine conference in Cambridge in the United Kingdom this last summer, and the results of health studies are just amazing. And the folks that are some of the pioneers in creatine research were saying everybody ought to be taking, you know, 2 to 3 grams of creatine just for the health benefits. Forget all the stuff about performance and, you know, that's great if you're an athlete or if you're elderly and you're trying to get stronger and maybe increase muscle mass a little bit, maybe that can help. But there's just so many benefits for health that we're finding out with creatine and creatine kinase and the regulation in the brain and the heart and the muscle. So that's kind of the real exciting stuff.
Cool.
Now, there's always new things coming out.
Sure.
I would like to see some data kind of pile up before I really jump on the bandwagon, but we tend to do a lot of those initial studies in our lab to see whether there's something to it or not.
So if someone were interested in learning more about that, where would they go?
Well, we have a website for our lab. The Exercise Support Nutrition Labs are viewed as one of the top in the world, actually, and it's esnl.tamu.edu.
Easy enough.
And then on there you can look at a lot of articles, not only our research articles. We also have a main focus on getting information out to the public in an understandable way. And so we've written lots of, you know, chapters and lay articles for fitness magazines and those type of things that people can read about and get up-to-date information.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so often it seems like the exercise scientists don't communicate with the rest of the world. And
right.
So it's great to hear that that's happening.
Yeah, I think the translation of the science to the public is where we've got to go, especially if we want exercise to take off as a medicinal intervention.
Right, right. So that's esnl.tamu.edu for all those of you that are listening and want more information. So we're going to wrap it up here. And
I add one more thing.
Sure.
The other thing that gets me excited is the work we're doing and the impact we're doing on women's health.
okay.
You know, we partnered with Curves about 6-7 years ago and done over 15 different studies looking at how resistance training and different types of diets can affect weight loss and improve health. And what's neat about this is that, you know, Curves now is in over 70 countries and almost 5 million women worldwide are using these programs that we've helped develop in the lab and seeing the impact that we're seeing not only in our lab on the results of women, but then everywhere we go and we find out that, hey, we've been following this program, we lost so much weight, all those type of things. That really makes exciting going back to work every day and working on this stuff.
Nice feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice validation there. Well, we're gonna wrap it up here. So what we always ask our guests is if they have one thing to tell people that are listening, kind of a take-home message, what would you tell them?
Good question. Exercise is important, obviously. Diet is important. Combining exercise and nutrition can really optimize health and well-being. But we're also finding out the type of exercise may have differential effects. And so we used to think, in a lot of countries, to think, well, go out and exercise, go walk, go run, do some aerobic, which is great, obviously, for the cardiovascular system. But what we've seen in my career is a shift kind of in the importance of the role of resistance training in maintaining muscle mass, maintaining strength, helping people as they get older not lose balance and those type of issues. So my one thing to say would be ensure that you incorporate some type of resistance training as part of your exercise program. And then time your meals, be smart about what you eat and when you eat, and you'll have some great results.
And with resistance training, you're not talking about weightlifting, not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Anything that adds resistance to the muscle. So it could be calisthenics, it could be little dumbbells, it could be bands, it could be lots of different things. You're not just going into the gym and lifting big barbells like you see on the weight room, but adding some resistance helps with bone strength. It just helps with so many things, that especially as you get older, that I think that's kind of a big change in the thinking about the role of exercise.
Yeah. So for those of you out there, don't forget you have to maintain muscle strength as you get older.
That's right.
Important. Well, thank you so much for being here today with us, Rick.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it. And thank you all for listening today. I want to thank our producer, Justin Dobson, here, who's keeping us all straight on the sound. And as we fade out here to John for the closing credits, we just ask you to remember to stay active and be well.
For this week's free Huffines Institute t-shirt, the first person who emails us at the address you hear in the closing credits and tells us what large award did Dr. Rick Kreider win this past summer wins our Huffines Institute t-shirt.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Justin Dobson and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.